You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Well, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who? A fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Who are you?
I'm glad you asked that again. Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe. Now please, get off this planet. While you still have a choice.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Earth Station Who. We are back for, I guess we'll call it for the next wilderness years, because we don't know when Doctor Who is coming back. So this is the time between times, as we like to say. Thank God we're talking about a time show. So it's perfect that we could do that. And we have 55 years of stuff to fill in for however long we need, and we decided to have a little fun with it. And we are going back to 1999, and we are going to be talking about Doctor Who and the Curse of the Fatal Death. It was released for Red Nose Day, or Comic Relief, depending on who you ask, and it was a great production, and actually it was the first appearance of the Ninth Doctor, you could say. Or, you know, you could also say this is Stephen Moffat doing his first Doctor Who. So it's kind of some neat stuff to talk about, and we got a great crew to talk all about it. Let's welcome our guests for this week first. Let's welcome the Herman brothers. Let's welcome, of course, David and Tom.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
So you are the one reason we are talking about this.
Yeah, because when you set us like a task of why don't you choose an episode, we can't be normal and choose an episode.
Of course not. You know, what would you expect from the Geekly Oddcast people, you know? So, exactly. You know, I think it's a fun one. And I hadn't actually heard of it until Doctor Who was back on the air. And it was like somebody had told me about it. And I had to look it up on YouTube at the time. And it was just like, oh, my God, why did I miss this? So it's pretty darn awesome. And, you know, I'm glad you guys chose this. Thank you for being
You're
with
welcome.
Us tonight.
Of course.
And we have our regulars with us. Let's welcome, of course, Mary Ogle.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here.
And howdy, Mike Gordon is here.
Howdy.
How are you, my friends?
I am fine. I can't speak for Mary, but I'm okay.
I'm glad you said we are fine.
I know.
We are fine.
We are many. We are fine. Okay, well, that's where we're going to be going tonight. It should be an interesting one. Of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com and let us know what you guys thought. We did get a piece of email. We'll read at the end of the show. So definitely let's have some fun with this one. You know, let's get started right away because there's only a little bit of Doctor Who news, and it's not even anything about the new series yet, anything at all, other than, you know, we do have a Doctor Who birthday to talk about. The Fourth Doctor himself, Tom Baker, just had his 85th birthday. Yeah. Yay, Tom.
Happy birthday.
Oh, many, many, many more.
Who? I hope so. I so hope someone offered him a jelly baby.
Who knows how long he'll be around? You know, it would be interesting to see. You know, I would love to see Tom return as the caretaker just for an episode.
That would be really nice. He was, that was just a really fun cameo.
Oh, it would have been great if he didn't ruin that cameo by announcing that he was going to be on the show.
Yeah, well, I kind of wasn't paying attention to news just so I wasn't spoiled. And so it did sort of catch me by surprise. I kind of figured they'd get him on, but, you know, I hadn't heard it.
Well, it would have been you know, it would have been fantastic because as soon as you heard the voice, you knew who was. And it was, I still melted when I saw him up on the screen.
Let me chill.
Was fantastic.
And it was just like, oh gosh. And it made me feel like a little kid again, you know, just because Tom was my first doctor. And to hear that voice, and it was just like, oh yeah, that is just amazing. And just, then to see him acting with Matt was awesome. It was just, it was really well done. And it was just like, and then to have his big Finnish adventure.
Oh yeah. When he came back to that, and he's been getting better in his stories too. So it's been they've been ramping up as I've listened to them.
I've heard three of them so far, and I've enjoyed what I've heard, and I feel like a little kid again, like I said earlier. But just the joy of Tom's doctor, it's like one of the complaints we had about Jodie was she was great, but she wasn't the smartest person in the room. And I think that's just bad writing. Tom's doctor, as soon as he walked in, he was the know-it-all.
Oh yeah.
And it carried over. It's carried over very
well. Yeah. One of the things with him is whenever someone needed to tell him he was wrong, he was always the person to tell him he was wrong.
Right. I have to, I know I mentioned this before cause it's been out for quite a few years now, but, when Tom turned 80, Big Finish came out with a special, interview between, Nicholas Briggs and Tom, that lasts about, it feels like over 60 minutes or so, but it is awesome. And so I definitely encourage people. I think Big Finish is still offering it. I don't know. They were offering, because when I got it, they were offering signed copies. So I don't know if they're still offering that. So I do have a signed copy by Tom. So yeah, obviously, you know, if you want a signed copy by Tom of anything, you should probably get that, you know, as soon as you can. But I definitely would recommend it. And also last month, on Big Finish's Christmas episode, like they do a podcast every month. And when they came out with their Christmas one, they actually had both Louise Jameson and Tom Baker talk about Christmas memories. And Tom's is just so funny. So I would definitely listen to that too. So yeah, because you know, he's still sharp and he's still witty. And he's still, what most importantly, he's still Tom Baker.
Yep, exactly. And he still has it. And, you know, did you see the video that he did to release to the fans on his birthday?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's, if you.
I did see that. Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
And, actually, you know, 85, he has all his faculties. He's still. Has the great wit and sense of humor, still has the ego, you know. So Tom is Tom, and just God bless him. It's just awesome.
Yes. And in the UK, he is a national treasure.
I wish, you know, they would knight him. I think it would be great to have
that. Would be cool. Actually, yes, but I would
be down. I'm a little surprised they haven't. Mm-hmm.
I am actually shocked they haven't. You know, Sir Tom Baker would be amazing.
Can you imagine?
If he wore the scarf to the knighting ceremony, would be like the best.
Actually, you know, that's an interesting thing to talk about, because I don't think any of the actors that have played the Doctor have ever been knighted. And I don't know. I would imagine... I would say that if one of them is going to, right now the front runner seems to be David.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I can't imagine right now who they knight before him. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, unless Tom, right? I mean, Tom should be knighted, but then I think, and not to say that, you know, I'm not suggesting that any of them are any lesser. But I would just think, if you look at his body of work and the way his career trajectory is going, I could just see, you know, David is going to be a factor in things for a long time to come. So, Not that the other guys aren't, but, you know, as high profile, you know, David's the guy.
Well, some very well-known British actors have been knighted recently.
There is actually a trick here. Technically, someone who's played the doctor.
He's right.
You're right.
Yes.
John, I know it's pure technicality. Right.
Yeah, but he was a doctor in one episode. It's okay. And a lot of audio adventures now, thanks to Big.
Okay, actually, I need to know who are we talking about? Because I was thinking Peter Cushing. There you go.
John Hurt.
Because Peter Cushing played him in the two movies.
I don't know if Peter has been knighted.
OBE. Yeah.
Okay.
It's listed on his wiki page.
Yeah.
There you go. So it must be true.
Everything on the internet is true. Come on.
Absolutely. There's two.
See, there you go. Silly us, two doctors. All right. But one's in canon, the other isn't.
This is true.
Yes.
So we also have other Doctor Who news is for local here in Atlanta. Our friends over at Wholanta, coming up the very first weekend in May, have announced their first two guests. Mikey, do you remember who they are?
I do. I don't. I know that one of them is Janet Fielding. And of course, she is...
Tegan.
The name's right there.
I was pretty sure it was exactly. Tegan, but I'm like, I don't want to make myself look like a fool if I get this wrong.
That's what I was like. I'm like, come on. I know I didn't care for her. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that one.
Not Janet Fielding, Tegan.
Yeah, that's true. I like Janet Fielding because I've seen her in interviews, and actually I've seen her at conventions before. I was actually she was at the Chicago TARDIS when I was there. So because they had all of they had the Fifth Doctor, Peter Davison, and all his companions, all three of them, right? So, and she's one of those.
Well, technically, he had six. Five companions.
If you count.
Six. Oh, that's cool. I do not count chameleon as a companion.
I'm looking to see. I can't remember the other guest.
Is Jason Hay Ellery. He is one of the founders of Big Finish.
Yes, he is. Speaking of which, that's why I remembered Chameleon. It's not that I normally do, but the most recent episode they released listed Chameleon as a companion. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but that was listed.
Yes, having Chameleon in it just makes me want to buy that disc. Yeah. So, yeah, no. But I'm excited with the new Missy disc they have.
Oh yes, those. And then, of course, we're only a few days away from the new River Song season becoming available as well.
Mm-hmm. The return of Eric Roberts as the Master.
Yeah, each chapter is a different Master, which is awesome.
It really is.
Yep.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. We are way behind on our River Song season, so hopefully we'll use this wilderness era time to get caught up on that. But
I wonder if we will have time to talk about that on this show.
I know, right?
You know,
actually, I don't know if we, because the person I was thinking of, I don't know if we've mentioned him before, but and this was announced. You're right, and it wasn't just announced; it was announced a few months ago. But Robert Alsop is going to be that. And he's a costume and prop guy for Doctor Who, and he actually worked on Bohemian Rhapsody too. So, I should say also because there's not a sequel to Bohemian Rhapsody yet. He's going to be there as well. So they've already got like some pretty cool guests for this what could be the last one.
Mm-hmm. This, as of right now, as of this recording, this will be the last two Atlanta, and 2019 will be the final. So I'm hoping they're going to go out with a bang.
Yep. So far, so good.
So, mm-hmm.
They've got a companion.
Yep. They do have a companion. Now let's see if they can get a doctor. So it should be great. And of course you could find all about Wholanta at Wholanta.com, and definitely check it out, folks. We've been going to Wholanta, gosh, going almost on 8 years now, and Alan and his crew put on a great, great show, and going to be very sad to see them go into the sunset. So, you know, definitely check it out, and some great community, great panels, great friends. It's just a lot of fun to go to. So it should be really interesting to see what they come up with for their final show. And I think that's all Doctor Who news we got right now.
Pretty much.
Yep. So let's jump into the curse of the fatal death.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun. Going back to March 12th, 1999. Wow. 10 years already. That's pretty. No, 20 years. Oh my God.
Wow.
Wow. I feel even older. Oh, God. 20 years. That is just amazing to think about. I was like, oh, 10 years. That's not that bad. And then I was like, dummy, look at the year. It's 2019. We're living in the future. But it's just. It's interesting to see, you know, you had Doctor Who by this point had been off the air for quite about a few years. 10, I think, already.
Didn't they go out in 89?
Yep. And then
yeah, the Fox thing was in 96. So this was at a time when we didn't know if we'd ever going to, I mean, we thought Doctor Who might be like seriously dead, like it, like experiencing its own fatal death because, you know, the failure of the TV movie didn't bode well for the franchise. So,
Well, as we keep on saying on the show, the TV movie did extremely well over in the UK. It just didn't do good here in the United States. So that's why Fox decided not to pick it up and continue with it.
Yeah. But unfortunately that was a lot of money involved. So,
oh, of course.
Curious question for you, because I don't know, but Fox, you know, owned the rights for that. They made the movie, and Fox is being taken up by Disney.
I see where you're going.
Does that mean that movie is now part of the Disney oeuvre?
Well, here's
I see where you're going.
It kind of. This isn't the first Disney product that's crossed over with Doctor Who, because they own Marvel as well. And, okay, there's this really weird confluence of events. So Marvel was tasked by Hasbro to write the Transformers series. And there was this weird deal worked out with them that any character that appeared first as in the main Transformers comic or in the show would be Hasbro's. And anyone that appeared in a Marvel comic first would be Marvel's. And they wrote this character called, like, this robot called Death's Head that they... Yeah,
I remember that.
They really wanted to make a Marvel character, so they had him appear in a Marvel comic first. But then, because he was still originally designed to be a part of the Transformers, he was originally huge. So they needed to shrink him down to, like, you know, person-sized. And they did so in the pages of a crossover with Doctor Who. The Doctor shrank him down using, if I remember correctly, the Master's Tissue Compression Eliminator.
Yeah, because if you remember at the time, the Doctor Who comics were being published by Marvel, at least in the States. I think they were published somewhere. Were they published by Marvel in the UK as well? But yeah, I know in the
Marvel
States,
UK.
So yeah, if not for Fox and Marvel, which are both going to be, like, you know, have Disney are owned by Disney now. Yeah, that's. But I think the BBC has retained all rights to Doctor Who. I don't think there's anything that that Fox can or Disney is going to be able to claim, because the TV movie has now been released by BBC Video. It's all over the BBC website. I mean, they acknowledge it as continuity. So there's not that weird sort of, you know, delay or trouble. Like when the Batman 66 series is a DC property and that was released by Fox, or it was, you know, run by, or it was, yeah, it was released and produced by Fox. So there's always been legal entanglements with that, but you don't see that with this. Maybe it's because they don't care. I don't know. Maybe they were just like, ah, you can have it. So
it's interesting to see, because, you know, the Fox movie is, you know, at least they finally got the rights to it to be able to put it out on DVD and add it to the Doctor Who collections.
Right.
And I know that took a lot of wrangling, but I also know that the only characters that Fox didn't own was the TARDIS and the Doctor. Everything else in there, obviously except for the Master, was owned by Fox. So that's why you've never seen Grace or Ching Li, I think it is.
Yes, I don't remember his name really.
Yeah, to be able to use those characters in Big Finish or in the comics or anything else.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So, because the actress who plays Grace has wanted to come back to Doctor Who, but she can't be the same character.
She could just pull a BBV, go by a slightly different name. They can act like it's all normal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We have people coming back all the time who played other characters. So.
Well, yeah, they've had a couple of doctors come back as other characters. Or other companions, yeah. So, it happens all the time.
So, but yes. I didn't mean for us to go on this huge tangent. I just wanted to point out, though, that it was this was like, I mean, this was at a time when we didn't know that we were ever going to get see Doctor Who ever again. So,
yeah.
So it was ripe for this kind of parody.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And really kind of a sponsored parody by BBC. So there'd been a lot of other parodies and sketch comedies and all that kind of stuff, but this is the first one that's like that kind of, you know, was sponsored by the BBC and is considered not necessarily in canon, but it's like it gets sort of the seal of like a wink and a nod approval.
Well, and it's actually, it's very faithful to Doctor Who.
True. There's an interview with Moffat in the bonus material where he basically says this was written to, it's not in canon and it wasn't necessarily written to be considered canon, but it was written to work completely within the canon of the show so far.
Oh, yeah. You can tell that. I mean, this time you could tell that Steven is a fan. I mean, he's pulling all sorts of references from obscure references from Doctor Who, as well as, you know, tropes from Doctor Who, that well-known.
But it's interesting. The production didn't make the sets. The sets were fan-made. They were made by a fan-made Doctor Who adventure, and then they donated those to Comic Relief to use in this episode. So.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
So all that money went for the cast instead of the sets.
Wow. Or the corridors.
Yeah. I love one of the funniest moments is when they're running through the halls. And
the long corridors, you know, they just Emma keep says, running through.
These halls all look the same.
There are so many like little dropped references to classic Who. I think when the doctor's talking about retiring, he's like, you know, he's talking about all the things he's done so many different times, so many different gravel pits.
Right.
I mean, I'm so tired of those gravel quarries.
I'll explain it to you later.
that.
And even the Dalek used it on her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so well done, and I loved – it was the same TARDIS set just with different colored lights in it too.
Yes.
One had a green light, one had a red.
Trying to hide it.
No.
I will say it's got better production values than some of the John Nathan Turner stories.
Yes. Horrifyingly true.
It's better written than a lot of the John Nathan Turner.
And for a quick side bit of fun, do we consider Rowan Atkinson a doctor? I mean, not technically canonically, but in the same vein as Peter Cushing. Also yes. A knight.
He makes a surprisingly good doctor.
He was great as the doctor.
Yeah, he feels very doctorish.
Yes, I was actually surprised how much I liked him as the doctor.
It was one of his dreams to play the doctor. So he obviously at the time was never going to get the opportunity. So when they asked him, he's like, yes, yes, definitely yes.
Can we all be thankful that, because apparently after this, one of the doctors they cycled through, and I know I'm jumping ahead, was Hugh Grant. He was given first pass at the Ninth Doctor, and thankfully...
Thank God he turned it down.
Well, if you think about it, though, he was, we just talked about a couple months ago, the screen.
That was Richard Grant.
That's
Richard Grant.
They're talking about
they're not related.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
They're both handsome. Although one is handsome and one is quite handsome.
Quite handsome.
And yeah. And actually it's not the one you think. But actually, you can tell, and maybe this is just because I know this from behind the scenes, but both Rowan Atkinson and Richard E. Grant were huge Doctor Who fans. So they jumped all over this. I don't know about Jim Broadbent.
Jim Broadbent actually played the Doctor before in a sketch.
Right.
So,
but I don't know, and my understanding is that Hugh Grant had really no connections to the show whatsoever. He just kind of did it because it was fun.
I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah, I think they said something to the effect of they could get him to do crazy things for comic relief. Like, he couldn't say no to them for some reason.
Yeah. It's so unfortunate to me that when Richard E. Grant finally does get a chance to do, like to appear in Doctor Who official canon as a bad guy, he's what, the Supreme Intelligence? It really is awful. Like, it's not his fault, but it's just not really done well.
Mm-hmm. It's how quickly they went through regenerations. It was just like, poof, poof.
Yeah,
I think he's the only, now correct me if I'm wrong, but is Richard E. Grant the only one of the five that actually do any, that have actually gotten a role in Doctor Who officially?
I believe so.
Yeah. And Richard E. Grant had two roles.
I know that Joanna Lumley has done some stuff for Big Finish.
Gotcha.
But not in the not within the show since it's come back.
So, yeah, no, we know totally there sense. Are, what, three Ninth Doctors?
Yeah. Rowan Atkinson, Richard E. Grant, and Christopher Eccleston.
That Eccleston guy. Yeah.
Do you really count him though? No. I don't know about that. You know. Let's see if we can put him in somehow. Out of all of them, he's the one who doesn't want to admit that.
I know. He just will not come back for any reason. I mean, I heard that the whole thing with him not being in the 50th anniversary is. He didn't trust he didn't trust the script, or he didn't trust the director, or like he wanted a specific person directing. So if things had gone differently, we might not have had John Hurt.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think we can all agree that Chris Eccleston is kind of. I mean, yeah, he says a lot of things and then does his actions are really kind of.
Yeah.
Like and I don't know if there's been a project that he's worked on yet where he actually speaks well, highly of. So he's kind of a strange guy, and he's starting to do conventions now. I mean, he did his first convention signing autographs and photos and all that kind of stuff last year. So, you know, he's out there now, along with everybody else. So.
Dragon Con, if you're listening. No. Yeah. Right.
I find that it's really okay. So we have to talk about, you know, that it's written. Of course, we've mentioned that it's written by Stephen Moffat, and this is his first time writing a Doctor Who thing for the BBC, right? So he's a big fan. He finally gets a chance to write this, and you know, it's really telling. I think it's like it's pure Stephen Moffat because it's full of references. It deals like he has. Already at this stage, he's already like doing stuff with time that is just really inventive and fun. Like death doesn't mean a thing in this. And, you know, I think you can all, and he has so many references that never pay off. So it really is like, it is like a already like a perfect Stephen Moffat.
Oh, yeah. Look at some of the stuff that shows up later. I mean, like the I'll explain later, the universe can't live without the doctor. Right. The number of truncated plot lines. And of course, the really bizarre one is I realized watching this, one of the other ideas he's going to rob from this one for a later episode is having the master crawl through a sewer in a Dalek episode.
Can we talk about the fact that at least in part, I feel like part of this script came after like Stephen Moffat watched the Bill and Ted movies and decided, wouldn't it be funny if the Doctor and the Master played this game?
It could be.
Hey, Ted. You got to remember to leave the tape.
But only one of us can go back first. Yeah, I was definitely kind of amused as I'm sitting here going, like, I'm watching a Bill and Ted sketch with the Doctor and the Master. I'm not complaining, but it's definitely what I'm getting right now.
Well, even think about it. You had a character who got really old in this, and then all of a sudden he was young again.
Yeah.
They had that with Moffat also.
We talked about the guys that played the Doctor, but I mean Jonathan Pryce is just awesome. I mean,
he was awesome.
He's so good, and I actually just watched for the first time last week. I watched Something Wicked This Way Comes, and it's a Disney movie with Jonathan Pryce, and he's just good. Like he's just great. Like he's always fun. He's, you know, he knows when to chew scenery and when to pull back. And, you know, even when he's being funny, he's still all in, like he's invested in it. Like when he's the old man, he's just so good.
With the walker. That was just awesome. I'll follow after
he's
you.
He's totally selling it. He's great.
Oh, yeah, God. He's totally committed.
Oh yeah, he's also a Bond villain. If you think no, try to forget that movie. But yes, he's a Bond villain.
He's also the equivalent of, isn't he the equivalent of the Pope in the Game of Thrones? Like, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yes, he's the creepy. Well,
not anymore on the show.
I didn't go into spoilers here. You did.
Hey, look, anybody on Game of Thrones is like
fair game. Yes.
Right, exactly. So, it took me I think the first few times I watched this, I had no idea that Emma was played by the girl from Absolutely Fabulous.
I didn't realize that until I was reading the Absolutely Fabulous Wiki earlier today. And I was only reading it because of Joanna Lumley. That one, she I knew was from Absolutely Fabulous.
Right. So you've got a Doctor Who, Absolutely Fabulous, two connections to Absolutely Fabulous.
Well, and also she was in the show that Stephen Moffat had on the air at that time.
Oh, really?
Called Press Gang.
Oh, cool.
And she was in that.
But we'll talk about that later.
She's fun as a companion. And, I mean, she does everything that, you know, and then, but I find it interesting that, you know, they'd already broached this subject with the TV movie, and this kind of maybe makes fun of it. But the fact that, you know, the Doctor and the companion are actually like, you know, what do they call it? Like had her in the dark, right?
The only companion I've ever had. You've had lots of companions. No, the only companion I've ever had.
Oh. God, she was a
I don't but know yeah. what your problem with Joanna Lumley that was, though. I'm like,
I think it's playing off of their relationship in Absolutely Fabulous, though. Now that I know that she was part of that show, her reaction makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah, that's true.
She was like, "It's you." Well,
at least it's not her mom.
There's a couple more settings on the sonic screwdriver that I didn't know about.
Ooh, it has three settings. Actually, funny line. When Gillette came out with that vibrating razor back when I was in college, like just because it was supposed to work better, a buddy of mine bought it, and I made that joke like, "Ooh, it has three settings," and he could not bring himself to ever use it.
That is the line Tom and I most remember from this episode, is that line. There are a couple of others, but that's the one that gets quoted.
You know, there's other reasons they follow the master.
I
I'll explain it later.
I think the best build for a joke was the etheric beam locators.
And they're firm. What are you trying to imply?
I think I see the on button.
What's so funny about that is that they keep referencing. They just like talk about beat a dead horse. I mean, they just keep like every incarnation of the Doctor like mentions it. Like it's just constantly like
all building up to Joanna Lumley going, "Oh, I've got etheric beam locators."
Exactly. It's like boom. There's the payoff.
Mm-hmm. I've seen this probably at least a dozen times, and every time the master falls into the sewer, I just lose it.
Yeah, the one that always gets me is when the Dalek pushes, like bumps him. Like that. Exactly. Yeah. I just can't. I lose it. It works every time.
For 936,
as he goes by on the walker.
And he's spitting out the sewage out of his mouth. It's just like, oh.
Oh, God.
It's just awesome. And I love it when he says, "They've augmented me," and he pulled the glove off and he has the plunger. And she's like, "What are you going to use that for?" And he couldn't answer.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's because of that scene that when they got around to Dalek, they had to have an answer for that.
I wouldn't doubt it. I truly wouldn't doubt that. You know, it's always been one of the funny things. They conquer the universe and fix toilets at the same time.
I still think it's amazing that one of the best Dalek cliffhangers ever is the one from Remembrance of the Daleks, when the cliffhanger is, "These things can climb stairs!" But it's terrifying because they've never been able to do it before.
Well, actually, since you're talking about the Daleks, this is Roy Skelton's last, I guess, on TV voicing of the Daleks. He did not make it to the new series. So this was his last production as doing the voice of the Daleks.
Wow. Yep. I didn't know that.
It's a downer now. I'm just going to go cry in a corner. We've mentioned Joanna Lumley, but it's worth pointing out this is the first time this is the first woman to play the Doctor in a BBC licensed production. Jodie Whittaker is in fact the third. She's playing the 13th Doctor.
That's so weirdly. Prophetic, predictive, like so strange. Like when I think this is the first time I watched it. Well, of course, because this is the first time I've seen it since Jodie was hired. So before that, it wouldn't have made any difference, and I wouldn't have been able to connect it, of course. But now I'm like, how weird is that? Like that's just so bizarre.
It's just one hell of a coincidence and really fun for
Moffat. Or Moffat.
Or is it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, did Moffat make the final decision for Jodie, or did that go with, I always forget his name. Chibnall.
Chibnall?
Chris Chibnall was his.
Yeah, it was. I think it was Chris.
And you could say Moffat paved the way, but again, in the interview they did with him, he's like, they were knocking around this idea at the end of the original series, so this was not a new idea. Honestly, it's an idea that was more than 20 years old by the time they actually did it.
One thing that I am interested to, I mean, I don't wish Jody a fast exit by any means, but I'm very curious as to what happens after, like the 14th Doctor. What does that look like? So.
Million.
But even that's not answered in this.
No, it is not. That said, if the 13th Doctor starts traveling around the universe with the Master, I'm going to start, you know, looking very carefully.
Well, it is interesting how in New Who, especially under, well, I guess under RTD a little bit, but then really under the Moffat era, is that the Doctor and the Master seem to have much more of a closer relationship than adversaries.
Yeah, well, I think RTD was trying to do that, but he never put in the groundwork to doing it. So when he tried to have the Master have like a redemption storyline, there was no reason for us to believe it. That's one of the few things you can say that Moffat carried through on well, is he actually made Missy more complex than just a psychopath.
I have a quick question, and I don't mean to take us back a step, but when we say, Jody is the 13th, and once again, I feel like I'm pulling off the, well, actually, I mean this as a question. I know canonically for the longest time, we always thought of Eccleston as the 9th Doctor, but then they threw in John Hurt in between the 8th and the 9th, so that kind of shifted everything forward.
So Jody is the 14th face, 14th. The 15th regeneration. I mean, also the 14th regeneration, so the 15th, body, as it were, because David Tennant had two.
Yep.
But the whole writing of it was that John Hurt's character never called himself an official doctor, and the rest of the doctors do not consider him to be one.
Yeah, that's why he's called the War Doctor.
Right.
So,
yeah, because they didn't really want to renumber all that branding. They didn't want to do that all rebranding after that.
And I will give Moffat credit for he did a lot of damage to potential storylines and other things like that. But he did bypass the whole argument of, well, is this a good stopping point for the show?
True. I wonder, because isn't it like at this point, wasn't it sort of canon that there was only going to be that there was only 13?
Yep.
Technically, but I feel like in the final Matt Smith or like the movie, they kind of played around with how many he potentially had.
Oh no, it was overt. Matt Smith's final episode gave him a completely new set of regeneration.
Right. But before that, at this time when this is written,
Joanna Lumley would have been the last Doctor.
Right.
But also, you know, even like during Matt's era, when he appeared like on Sarah Jane Adventures, he was like joking around saying, I think it was Clive was asking him, like, how many times have you regenerated or how many can you? And he says, oh, I could regenerate thousands of times, you know, that type of thing. Moffat kind of threw that already, so starting to throw it out the window. And, you know, during the fourth Doctor, if you remember Horror Fang Rock, no, actually, Brains of Morbius.
Oh, that one was that's a head trip.
Yeah, where they show all the different regenerations, and they just threw in different people who were on the crew as the Doctor.
You're like, who are these guys?
So it's just like, because it was always the question, was even the William Hartnell Doctor the first one? Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know. So, of course, he used to say, I am the first, the original, you might say.
The fan theory is that, yes, William Hartnell is definitely the first one. And the reason they all cite this, and there's this entire fanon thing built up around it, is that the first Doctor is shown to have a normal pulse. So there's the fan theory is that the Time Lords do not get the second heart until their first regeneration. I don't even remember which episode it's said in, but there's this entire theory built up around it.
Hmm. Well, I think I'll say on record that I always want William Hartnell to be the first. I don't want to ever have a story where that they say, oh, there was one before that. You know, I think it was kind of interesting to, and it was necessary because Chris didn't want to play in the sandbox again. So Stephen was forced to create the War Doctor. But other than that, let's just move forward. Like, all I don't want to see a thing.
My question for you then is, what do you think of the Carmel Master Plan?
I don't want to see Doctor Who the origin years or the year one or early years or a prequel series of Doctor Who. I just don't.
But how about a Doctor Who 2099?
Stop pointing at me. No, you pointed first. No, you pointed.
That is quite possibly my favorite end credit scene ever.
Yes. So good. We won't say anything more because we don't want to spoil it, but
like we haven't been doing the other things on this show.
Oh, so good. So good. But yeah.
But yeah, this was a lot of fun, and it must have been thrilling to see, like, not knowing what was coming, to see Tom's opening and the music.
Mm-hmm.
And just to, you know, oh, Doctor Who is back. Oh, and then just hear, you know, and it's like, you have your, you know, you've had your microphone on the whole time.
You've turned off the picture, but I can still hear you.
Still hear you.
I do that.
And that is that's such a Doctor and Master thing to say to each other.
Yeah.
But what's great about it is that it holds up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. It's great to watch. I mean, really, they put a lot of effort into this 20-minute thing. It's a parody, but they're all like giving it their all. They're all really selling it. It's well written. Yeah, and it feels like a Stephen Moffat episode.
And it probably was not expensive to create. They used the same sort of sets.
A genius plot, plot moment when it's like, when there's a, like the whole joke they did earlier with going back and bribing all of these aliens comes full circle later on when you realize, yeah, we established that the Doctor and the Master can speak this language. This horrible, horrible language.
Yes. What? It's Doom? What are you trying to say? Sorry, I released one a little bit.
Can I get a different seat?
Why do Daleks have seats on their spaceship?
I'll tell you later.
There's another one that Moffat robbed for a later episode.
I always think as a writer, like, you really have to dip down if you're doing fart jokes. I did think that the fact that the race on Tercerus died, you know, they became extinct because they discovered fire. I thought that was really funny. Then the rest of it, like that, you know, the communication between the Doctor and the Master was the only part of that I found somewhat amusing is when the Master was like, what? And she's like, I'm sorry, that was me. Fart jokes I could do without. But.
Yeah, you're clenching too much.
Yes. I guess even the English are not above, you know.
Oh, definitely jokes. Not.
Above all, no, the English are not above fart jokes.
So it's interesting, Mary, when you said that it still holds up, because I was thinking, yes, because the tropes are still there.
Yeah. I mean, it feels very Doctor Who.
I think there are, in general, fewer Corys now. There are still Corys, though. I can't argue that.
There are still Corys. They can't get rid of those.
Oh, no. You know, you did see the New Year's special when, you know, the army fought a Dalek in the quarry.
Yeah. Well, to me, they unintentionally spoofed it back in The End of Time, because when we saw the Master before, the Doctor had set up some kind of funeral pyre and in the middle of this quarry location. And because of, in that episode, what we had seen, it looked like he had taken the Master back to the End of Time and set up the pyre there, because that was the only location like that in that episode. But then
when the end of time comes around, it turns out it was just, he just took the master to a random quarry on Earth somewhere and gave him a pyre. And that's how the master's minions were able to find his ring or whatever it was.
Yes. And he came back like Harry Potter or something. Like
oh that. God, no, you cannot rip into that episode more than Tom and I have ripped into that episode.
One of the cool things with this also is that Richard Curtis, who produced this, also wrote Vincent and the Doctor.
Oh.
Later on.
I did not catch that one.
Aha. Uh-huh. See? Where's your notes now, dude? See? It's pretty awesome, you know. So it's all tied in together, and this is just a lot of fun.
As we say, it is a small island, right? So there's only so many people that they have to work in the industry. So there's going to be a lot of overlap.
Yes, Doctor Who, even you can appear in a plastic alien suit. Yeah.
But I like the fact that, you know, Steven is a fan. It's written, it's fun. It pokes fun, but it's full of love. So you can really enjoy this. It's not mean-spirited. It's not biting. It's not, you know, I mean, certainly there have been Doctor Who parodies over the years that have been less than complimentary. But this is all in good.
Yeah. Form. Even the Doctor dying multiple times over was kind of a spoof, because Russell T. Davies and to a lesser extent Stephen Moffat were of the opinion that the 5th, 6th, and 7th Doctors didn't have long lifespans compared to the previous ones. Like, Tom Baker canonically is, you know, several hundred years old by the end, because by the number on his diary when he meets Romana. But all the others, I mean, it's starting with Peter Davison. It's like he's accounted for the entire time. He has the same chain of companions. So how long was he really around? That's why Russell T. Davies did the whole 900 years old and kept advancing it 1 year for each season.
Oh, that was frustrating.
Well, the fun thing with it is, you know, a friend of our show is a guy named Rich Morris. He did this comic strip called The Ten Doctors.
Yes! I've read this.
And it is a brilliant, brilliant strip. And it ties in almost every single character who's been in Doctor Who. And I love when they meet the Ninth Doctor, and he's talking about Rose, and she goes, "Well, you're only 904. And all the older doctors go, "Only 904? Liar, liar."
Don't they do something like, yeah, you must be having, like, you were 900 back when you were having that midlife crisis, and the Sixth Doctor comes in, like, midlife crisis?
Exactly. It is just purely awesome. And there's just so much good stuff, you know, out there for Doctor Who fans. And this just showed it. And that's what I loved about it. And, you know, there's good, fun Doctor Who stuff that might not be in canon, but it's still a lot of fun. And that's what, you know, we have a lot of time to fill up with Doctor Who now. So we're going to have fun. And this is the beginning of it, folks.
Basically, we're really rich.
Bingo! There you go.
Start going through the BBB audience.
Yes, yes, yes. That's so true. All right. We've been talking about this for a while. Do we want to give this ratings? Let's do it. 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. This is not an ordinary rating, so be gentle, folks. All right, let's have Mary go first.
Oh, I totally give it 5 TARDISes. It's just so much fun. It's hilarious to watch. And I mean, yes, it's crude and silly, but, you know, so Doctor Who is crude and silly sometimes. I mean, it's perfectly in the spirit of Doctor Who. And I think that's what I love about it. And it's, you know, it still holds up. I would show it to people today.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. All right, Tom.
I give it 5 TARDISes as well, along with 2 Dalek plungers, way up. I thoroughly enjoy this as much as the first time I watched it. There's probably a bit more I enjoy now, knowing more about Who now than I did when I think first time around seeing this, but I agree. Definitely would share this with just about anyone who loves Doctor Who, and we'll definitely watch again in probably sometime in the immediate future.
That is awesome. Judy hasn't actually seen it yet, so I'll probably end up watching it with her.
Oh yeah, she'll love it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. She'll be like, either that or I don't get it. You know, what did they mean by that joke? You know, it's like, it's old Doctor Who, hun.
They're fart jokes.
I'll explain it to you later. All right, David.
Definitely 5 TARDISes out of 5. And I've seen a couple of attempts at spoofing Doctor Who, and some have been pretty good. But the best are the ones that don't that are very loving in how they do it. They don't cut the show down in the effort of making a joke, and I think this one hits that point. That level where everything that is done out of love for the show. And that makes a difference, and it comes through. And it doesn't hurt that the jokes really cracked me up.
No, totally understand that. Agreed. All right, Mikey.
Yeah, I'm 5 TARDISes. It's funny. It's in good taste. It's been it's good spirit. It's not mean spirited at all. It's fun to watch. I can watch it over and over again. And it predicts the future, like that's amazing, like that it does that. So,
Yep, totally understand that. All right, I'm gonna go along for the crowd. I'll do 5 also. There we go. Okay. Wow.
That was my phone, which I made the really unprofessional thing of not sitting putting on mute, but it could not have come at better timing.
That is awesome. Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people, you know, haven't seen this, and if you want to see this, it's right up on YouTube, which is
yep,
it's usually the now, best way.
There is a video release for this too,
or no? I had it on VHS originally, and it just got re-released, I want to say, in 2017.
Okay, so I'm just curious as if what the DVD has. I mean, is there a? I mean, they're really good at doing bonus features, so I would imagine that there's like good content with it.
I mean, there's probably a bunch of other spoofs from over the years as well.
Just say there's not dimensions in time. Please let there not be dimensions in time.
I would say I would definitely say that the Doctor Who crossover with Absolutely Fabulous was much better than the Doctor Who crossover with which one was it? Because that's what Dimensions of Time was.
EastEnders.
Yeah, EastEnders.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because it actually has, you know, some of the older Doctors in it, and it's like some of their. I think it's what Pat. It's which is John. Pertwee's last appearance as the Doctor, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah.
So official, well, not even officially, because there was also that fan film that they did with the Doctor, what is it, 2B or whatever, and he appeared in that too, but that's for another story for another time.
I mean, well, Pertwee was on stage for a long time too, and then Colin Baker took over for him when he left the stage show.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's interesting, and you know, if this goes on long enough that we don't get new Doctor Who, we might actually be looking at Dimensions.
Oh, nah, count me out for that God. One. No.
It's still better than Trial of a Time Lord.
Well,
so
that's. Yeah,
I mean,
I'm not
it
sure.
might be better than Time and the Ronnie, but.
Okay, this is an interesting question, though. All right, so as far as mini episodes that were released for charity, like the Children in Need or the Red Nose Day stuff, like, is this your favorite? Or like, because there was also Time Crash, Moffat, Night of the Doctor, isn't that Moffat as well? And then I think there's been a few others, but
I would say Night of the Doctor was a nice touch, but you know, it was more valuable just for that, you know, seeing the Eighth Doctor again. It wasn't as good as this. Time Crash, I remember being really good. But Time Crash was very much a fun romp in its own time period, as opposed to this being a fun homage to Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. Again, Time Crash being a little bit predictive in the fact that, you know, he's talking to, he's acting with his future father.
Touche. Well, it's like the meme that's going out there, somebody asking Peter Davison, what is the best thing a Doctor Who fan has ever given you? He looks at them and says, a grandchild.
Talk about your small island.
So, yeah, it's interesting stuff. All right, we did get a piece of email. Let's pull that up real quick. And it is from Bill Lemond. And Bill wrote, hi, Whovians. I have seen that episode. He's referring to Spiders in the UK. And while I enjoyed parts of it, especially Yaz and Ryan, but I can't actually recall how it ended. I've actually watched a few of the other episodes after listening to you all discuss them. And that didn't lessen my enjoyment at all. I'm happy you called my attention to some of these episodes. Thank you for taking time and effort to talk about what you love enough to want to see it done as well as possible. Thanks again, Bill. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
So it's always great getting emails from our listeners, and please keep them going. Make sure you're listening to us during this next long, long time. So please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. We would so appreciate it, folks.
If there's something that you want us to cover, I mean, we've got time. So let us know what you want us to cover.
Nothing but time.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's been great, you know, getting these emails. And it's just always great, you know, stuff from people that, you know, these are people we don't even know, which is awesome. That means people are listening to us. That's so excited. But it's awesome. And, you know, it's just a great experience sharing our love for Doctor Who. It showed tonight with us talking all about, you know, the Curse of Fatal Death. It's pretty darn awesome. Okay, let's go ahead and thank our guests for joining us and bringing this one to us. Tom, David, thanks.
You're most welcome.
This was quite enjoyable.
I enjoyed it very much. So where can people find you guys?
So we are the Brothers Herman of the Geekly Oddcast, a show about television, gaming, and whatever comes to mind. And my particular side of it is actual play role-playing games. So you can find us on our podcast, Geekly Oddcast. We are on Facebook. The page is The Geekly Oddcast and Otter Worlds. And Tom, do we have another one?
I mean, you can find us on Twitter. Otherwise, you can find us through the ESO webpage.
Thank you. I was waiting for you. It's like, and.
Gotta stretch it out.
Okay. But thank you, guys. You guys do a great show. I listen every time you guys put out a new one.
And we'll be back soon. We are on hiatus at the moment, but we're just building up a catalog for 2019.
Perfect. And, of course, let's thank our regulars. Mary, as always, it's been great.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was really fun to talk about. I hadn't watched it in a long time, and I really enjoy it every time.
It's a lot of fun. Where can people find your artwork?
You can find me at maryogle.com or on Etsy at evisionarts.
Fantastic. And Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
It's always great talking Doctor Who with you, my friend.
Absolutely. That's what got us to that's what brought us to the dance 9 years ago.
Oh God, 9 years ago. Wow.
Better than 20.
Good point. So it's pretty awesome, you know, being able to talk to you guys at home. And, you know, we definitely are going to be bringing, you know, a lot to you over the next year or so. And, you know, we are just hoping, you know, that you guys are still enjoying it. Like Mike said earlier, if you guys have anything you want us to talk about, we already have plans for some Big Finish. We already have plans of some classic series. We have some, you know, maybe we might even do a book review. We never know. We might go into some of the, you know, further adventures that they put out, or, you know, some of the things from the wilderness years makes me feel like we're there now again. So it's just interesting to do. So definitely write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. All right. That's going to wrap it up for tonight. You can find us up on social media. There's a Earth Station Who Facebook group, and we also have a Twitter. So, you know, we're up on some of those places, and you can always listen to our show up on any of your favorite media players. We are even up on Spotify now, so definitely look for us and leave us feedback. That's another way to let people know that you guys are listening. So that's the best way we could do it. So we will be back again in 2 weeks, and we are going to be talking, you ready for this, folks? We're going back to the Tom Baker era. We were just talking about Tom earlier in this episode.
Happy birthday, Tom.
Exactly. Happy, happy birthday from all of us. And we are going to be looking at Full Circle. That's right. The episode that brought Adric to the fold.
No!
Yes, we are looking at E-Space Trilogy.
Are we going to E-Space?
We are going to E-Space. It's like, figured, you know, it's been a while since we saw Tom dressed in red, so let us see what he's like. Until then, my name's Mike Faber. It's been my pleasure to talk to each and every one of you, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace. And we're done. Boom.
Yay. You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
What is the Geekly Oddcast? It's a panel show of television.
I mean, seriously, where else was I supposed to go and watch Gomez Adams ride a rocket ship on a railroad track?
Gaming.
And the dice say 17.
Oh my god, 17 is Mystic Quest. And whatever comes to mind.
Why does Zod need a starship?
Alternating Thursdays on the Geekly Oddcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.